You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells. This week's rugby story belongs to the true rugby man. Began his rugby league journey later than most at Folly Lane, then went on to have a successful career with Salford Red Devils and Swinton Lions, whilst also having a spell with Burnage Rugby Union. He stepped away from the game for work, but was lured back to his hometown club to help with the rebuild. And what a job he is doing with other great people at Salford Red Devils. Ladies and gents, Mr. Ian Bleese. Follow, like, share, subscribe and endorse us via Facebook, Trot the Egging, Twitter, @TrotTheEgging/@JohnHeth, Instagram, @Trot_D_Egg_In, YouTube, Trot the Egging, LinkedIn, John Hetherington, and Spotify, Trot the Egging. Mr. Bleese, how are you and the family doing, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Had a bit of a quiet Christmas. We've been a bit poorly. I think there's been a bit of lurgy going around the country, right? Haven't there? But recovered a bit now. So, yeah, looking forward to 2023, mate. Really am.
Yeah, I bet you are, mate. So, before we get stuck into your rugby story, Ian, where was home for you and who lived at home with you as a kid?
So, yeah, I come from a family. I got brother and sister. Mum's still with us. Dad passed away a few years ago. Got brought up in Swinton locally. And spent all my life here virtually. So went to Moorside High School, Grosvenor Road Junior School, and then played my amateur rugby at Folly Lane. Right. And then signed straight from Salford as a 18-year-old, I think, from Folly, and was there for 12 years, whatever it was, 13.
Yeah. Right. So we'll rewind a little bit. So you're in a football mad city, aren't you? Mm-hmm. As a young lad, mate. So what side of the colour chart are you?
I was football mad, if I'm dead honest with you. Yeah, United fan. Yeah. My brother was a fan. Still is. He's still a City fan. So we had a lot of hassle in the house on Derby Day. I actually got stopped playing football at school because I wouldn't play rugby.
Right.
Wasn't mad for rugby when I was at high school. And they stopped me playing football because I wouldn't play rugby. And they must have seen something in me as a rugby player, but I was really good at. I really thought I was going to make a professional football player at one stage. Yeah. And then after leaving school, my mates had come down to Folly. And I never looked back, really, from rugby. I did enjoy it. I was just really hell-bent on making a career out of football at the time. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And rugby was waiting for me. So it took me about 18 months before I signed professional for Salford. From starting, really.
Going in blind, really, Ian, wasn't it? And...
Yeah, it was bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. I remember coming home after some matches, and I used to play open age on the Saturday and then play under 18s, under 19s as we grew older on Sunday. You just didn't care then. You played two games in 2 days. It was brilliant.
Bounce back ability, wild.
Yeah. What you're doing. And obviously a few drinks in between games as well. Part of the fun as an amateur, isn't it? But I remember coming up and my dad was saying, you're getting some attention, some attraction here from scouts. Because we had a pretty good team, I think. Out of Folly's under-18s team, 19s team, I think 13 ended up signing either pro or semi-pro or whatever at the time. Right. So it was quite a good team, and there was a lot of scouts used to watch us. And it happened very quickly, really, if I'm honest. Yeah. Didn't look back really from starting at Folly to, you know, going right through my playing career. It was good. Enjoyed it.
Yeah. So would you have played football club wise as well, or was school really?
Town team type football. Yeah. I played at a club called Wigan United, I think they call Monton Amateurs now in Worcester.
Right.
And I played for donkey's years and loved it.
Yeah.
Made town team, county level, I think, at the time. But yeah, looking back, never really going to make it. And there's not a lot of people do, is there? So
no, that's it. Yeah, and I imagine it's like, I don't want to drag the other cord into you, but I'll mention it to you in a bit because I've played both. And like certain levels in rugby union gets a little bit clicky, mate. I imagine football's a bit like that as well.
Yeah, very much so. And I played rugby union when I finished. I played for a couple of years at Swinton Lions, at Salford, and then I went to Burnley's Rugby Union and played
there for years
just to get the other side of it, really, because I'm not one of them people who, you know, who say don't watch rugby union. I quite like watching. I'm hopefully going to one of the Six Nation games in a few weeks, actually.
Yeah.
So I quite like it. I'm not that type of person who say, oh, don't watch it, it's rubbish. I know the standard of club rugby union is probably not the best compared to what I think we've got at Super League. Yeah. But I do enjoy it. I enjoyed my time playing rugby union. I really did. And I have respect for both codes. I really do.
Yeah. No, I do myself. It's just like you touched on there, the certain levels you don't, or I never found it with rugby league. Not that I was brilliant, but I played good enough for it to see what the gauge was like in both codes, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
So how does the scouting system work then, mate? Was it through your dad, like you mentioned? And
the years gone by, I think clubs still have them. You know, we've managed to build a little network up of scouts now, so it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Scouts in various areas, watching various teams, and a lot of it's word of mouth. It still is. Yeah. Obviously, the bigger the club, the more scouts they can have. And you can see that with some of the recruitment that goes on, you know, in Super League clubs. And we're not as fortunate as other clubs, obviously. So we have to be really smart what we do. But some of the stuff we've been doing recently on our pathway, even though we haven't got a Cat 1 Academy, has been really good. And we've been sort of like recognised now. And we can actually have some under 18s and under 16s games, which we did last year. We have a couple more this year. Yeah. And we're sort of like, obviously, we're picking up the players who, you know, the other clubs don't really want to take. But that's been good, because we've managed, even through the reserves team, the new reserves set up, you know, six of them reserves lads made their debuts, Super League debuts last year, which I was really proud of. And it was circumstances a little bit that made that happen. But, you know what, they played and they played well and they made us very proud as a club. So it's very important you have your scouting mechanism. It's very important you have your pathways. I am still keen on not stripping out of the community game. I think as a professional game, I do believe it against the voices of others, and I'm happy to have that argument that I do think we strip away too much out of the community game as clubs. And I think we should seriously look at that going forward with AMG. And I have ideas about that, and others do, and others disagree with me. But
and that's life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's certainly a... For me, there's a model out there for regional academies, but all clubs have been get on board with that, and that won't be an easy task. But I think there's definitely a model in an independently run regional academy where, because as a kid, I wanted to play for like Salford Boys, even rugby league, ambition, even football was to play for Salford Boys. And that's sort of like, I know things have changed, I get that. But if you can get that ambition through your youths coming up to want to play for their town team or their regional team, I think that's a really strong ask of a person to want to do that. And it's representing your hometown, your home county, whatever way you want to do it. So I think there's still definitely a model out there that we should look at as a game, and not keep taking as many kids away from the community game, because the community clubs are struggling. I think we could pull all that together in the new reimagining ideas from ING, but we'll see what comes of all that in 2023.
Well, obviously, like I said, I'm from Whitney Shore, from Swinton, south of Greater Manchester. We're both proud of where we're from. The desire will definitely be there from a young lad from Swinton, Salford, and certainly from Widnes to play for Swinton, Salford, and Widnes.
I've always said, you mentioned it before, it's Salford's a footballing city, really, if I'm honest. Although I think we've made great strides in changing that thought process with some of the, you know, the finals and the successes we've had over a few years. So I can see and feel it changing. See kids on the street a lot more wearing kits, and I go, you know, in the local parks, and I can see him playing with rugby balls, which you know, I don't know, 10 years ago, 12, 15 years ago,
it wasn't a scene. No.
Now it wasn't visible, but it is now, and we need to keep pushing that. But it is difficult in a football strong city. But I think we're having a good go at it as a club. We've worked bloody hard over the last few years to make it happen. It won't be easy going forward either, but you know, I think some of the noises we're making and the way we're playing a really good brand of rugby league, I think that's good for the city. And with everybody's backing, we can certainly give this city something to be proud of as a sporting club. And I think that's where we're trying to head.
Oh, definitely. You're the side on the up, aren't you? You can see that. And we'll touch on a little bit of recruitment and getting into the thing. But I think your vision might be a certain way, because without being rude, a lot of clubs have outside people running it, don't they? You've been in the community game, you've managed to crack the pro game, and you've managed to keep the humility between the two. Yeah, because you've experienced it, and a lot of others haven't, have they? And or they're from other sporting backgrounds and things, I think it makes a big difference, that it.
Yeah, it probably could do. A lot of people do that. It's hard for me when you're on the inside to look at that, and I never get carried away each season, you know.
But yeah,
you've still got to work hard. You've still got, like you say, you've still got to be humble. You've still got to remember where you've come from. It's very important for me.
Mm.
And I think the effort you put in is obviously heightened when you've had, you know, like, so I played for the club for 12 years, so you know, cut me in half. You've got
you bleed Salford,
yeah, of course, and that's just the way it is. So it's easy. And I've always said, you know, working at this great club has always been my dream job. So hopefully that'll continue for a while. But
yeah,
we're all desperate for success, as in win a trophy, and that's what we're all geared up to do. But I think, you know, other club structures is not something that I took that much notice of or interest me. I'm solely zoned in on what we do and what we try and achieve as a club, which is very important. But it does help when you've got people around you. And there's a few in the business now in the organisation that are Salford through and through, so that helps.
Yeah.
I've always said it, if you're grafting life and you're a hard worker, you'll get your rewards.
Yeah, you know, 100%, mate. So we'll rewind then. So you get asked to go to Folly Lane. And for listeners and viewers that might not know, it's one way in, one way out, isn't it?
Mm.
And you are in an atmosphere once you get beyond that fence. So how was it when you first rock up and you're there for your first session? Is it something you enjoyed?
Good, yeah, the lads were great. And it was good. There was no pressure. It was like a more social side than anything.
Yeah.
But we had a great little team. We had some rugby lads up there who were playing, who'd played for years, and I was just sort of like in and out of my school team and wasn't that bothered, just going because my best mate was there. Mm. And anyway, quickly fell in love with it, mate, if I'm dead honest with you. And within 6 months, we're playing against, obviously, Lanworthy and Earlham and Eccles, who are our local rivals. And there was a lot of... We had a great... When the clubs merged into the town team, we had some really great games with Oldham and Wigan. And so it was a really good time for local amateur sport. I remember, you know, we used to have packed touchlines, and a lot of community clubs still get that. But I remember, you know, for the first time, certainly at Folly Lane, we had, you know, packed touchlines on a Sunday morning watching us play. And that, I ended up getting picked for Lancashire amateurs at the time, which was massive, you know, playing against Yorkshire and Cumbria in that little tri-party cup thing. That was huge. Yeah. And that was my first taste of proper representative football. And it shocked me how quick it was, how hard and tough it was. So I remember going home after the game thinking, wow, this is serious.
Yeah. So you noticed that straight away, yeah?
Straight away, yeah. Yeah, there was a step up from just turning out on a Sunday pitch to go in. I can't remember where we played now, but it was a really nice facility. And the game was quick. Not as physical, because it isn't when it's as quick.
Not
thuggery going on and stuff like that. And then I hadn't even obviously signed for Salford yet, but I'd noticed the marked difference from just playing local amateur to a bit of a representative game playing for Lancashire. I think I've still got my jersey somewhere. So it was a very proud moment for me and the family, that playing for, I think it was Lancashire under-19s, I think, against York and Cumbria. And that was good. So that was a good breeding sort of taste of my first hitting, sort of not the big time, but making it to a level where you can definitely feel and see that you've got to be a bit better than what you are, mate, if you want to make it in this game.
Yeah, yeah. And so the selection process would have been because you've impressed with your club side, you've been invited down.
Yeah, the Lancashire scouts. So the amateur scouts going watching the amateur game.
And when you're in that environment, mate, how was you in a new changing room?
Fine. It's banter, isn't it? The changing room. Yeah. If you can survive in a changing room, you can survive anyway.
You'll be all right. Yeah. It's a good way of putting it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's something that you do miss when you're packing, playing the banter and the crack. And long as everything stays on the right side of it.
Jovial and that.
We had some great times. We had some great times on and off the pitch. And that's what... Yeah. I think that's what playing amateur, whatever sport, is all about, enjoying it,
Your
mates, you know, we had a beer afterwards and a bite to eat or whatever. It was just good times, fond memories, and sort of like changes a bit when you sign pro. I probably lost a lot of mates as a result of that in a way, but you have a decision to make when you're signing like that. You either, you know, you know, going out on a Friday and Saturday night, what stops it stopped for me, you know, and we played winter then. So that's it, when we played on Boxing Day and we played on New Year's Day, for example. So your Christmas and New Year's, for example, were just a write-off. You were down and dirty in the pro game. So you had to, and if you wanted to make it, you have to dedicate yourself. So I look back with fondness from the amateur game, definitely.
Yeah. And was there ever a moment in them step-ups, which we'll touch on in a minute because you've just mentioned your sign pro, did you feel you belonged, or was there a time when you thought, am I good enough?
Yeah, I think most professional sportsmen, imposter syndrome, and I think most sportsmen mentally, you know, question themselves, should this be happening to me? That's part of your, I think, your mental toughness that you work out eventually.
Yeah.
But there's definitely moments in your career where I remember, and again, I got picked to play for Lancashire at professional level. I think we played at Headingley versus Yorkshire. And at the time we were going well as a club. I think we might have got promoted into Super League. And I think I played in the pack with like Richie Ayres in the back row. I was second row with Dennis Betts, and we had Andy Platt, Martin Dermott, Ukin, and we just, you know, Bobby Goulding and Sean Edwards was my halfbacks, and I was like, wow, you know, this is like
talented, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, Roy Hanley, Gary Schofield, you know, playing on the other team for Yorkshire. I'm thinking, you know, should I really be here? So you do question yourself mentally, but once that kickoff, or once that whistle goes in the kickoff, it's just, you just get on with it, don't you? You've got to yourself, because if you don't, you'll soon get trodden all over and you'll die. So
yeah, and it'll pass you by, mate. If in it,
very much so.
I
remember that game clearly, because you sort of like, when you look back on your career, and listen, you know, we had some great players at Salford throughout my career. In my 12 years, I come across some fabulous players and some great teams. But I remember I got a pass off Sean Edwards at the first 5-10 minutes or something. And normally, playing for Salford, the defence would be like virtually off by the time you get the ball. But I actually had some space when I got the ball. I'm thinking, wow, I've got space here. And that's the quality of the other players.
Yeah. You
know, that little, again, that step up with Bobby Goulding and Sean Edwards, and they put me through a gap. I'm thinking, and I remember running thinking, gee whiz, this is mad, this. I've never had this much space.
I like it.
this is all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when you get home and you reflect, you think that's because of the quality of player that you're playing with there. It's probably not you.
Yeah.
All right, you're running in the right hole there, but you caught the ball, but they've made the gap for you. But it was a good experience for me. And again, something to look back with fondness, yeah.
Yeah. And was you someone, did you need an early touch here? Or was you happy to bide your time?
And again, could you play for like 12 foot, whatever? Depends what mood you're in sometimes. Yeah. And I think somebody sent me the Lancashire Cup final when we played Widnes. I think it was 92 or something like that. And I watched the game, fast forwarding it, and just watching it the other day. And I haven't watched it much since. But they're a great team. And I remember in that game, I definitely thought before the game, I'm going to get hold of that ball early, you know, and try and make me a mark. Unfortunately, it did. I think I had a half-decent game, and we played against a great team, Afire, Jonathan Davies, Devro, Kurt Sorensen. It was a great team. We put up a good performance. We got beat at the end, but I also won it. But, you sort of like think, get an early touch, settle your nerves. And if you remember in them days, there used to be a good ruckus as well at the first scrum.
That
always used to happen, and get a bit of fire out of your bellies. And the referees used to say, right, calm down, let's play a bit of rugby now. So there's different ways of motivating yourself as a pro, and there still is. It's a lot cleaner now, and it's a lot more professional and faster than, even though it's very physical, it's very clean. I think it's a great game to watch, a great sport to watch now. It's
100%,
It's summer rugby, it makes a big difference as well.
Yeah. So when you sign it, back then, how did the... Obviously, you're a hometown boy, so they're already like 2-0 up, aren't they?
Yeah.
But how does it work? Is it, do you go and meet them in a pub instead of a coffee shop now? Or?
No, I went to the ground, actually. It took my dad. My dad come with me. Didn't have an agent then. All players have agents nowadays. Went with my dad. Agreed a signing on fee, and then the club get a bit of money. The amateur club get a bit of money as well, which...
Right.
I think it's very important. And we agreed it within half an hour, probably. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
That wasn't the driver for me, though. The money wasn't the driver. Putting a Salford shirt on was a driver, always has been, always will be. It wasn't never about money. That's a plus. That was a plus for me. That was a plus for me. Because within whatever contracts I got, I think I've still got it on somewhere. You got so much for, you know, 5 games, so much for 10 games, yeah, so much for 20 games. I chewed that up within the first year, really. So you've got to remember, Sky TV wasn't around then, so there wasn't that much money in the game either. I was still playing when Super League came in and Sky came in, but I was at the back end of my career then. So for me, it was never about the money, although it was useful. And obviously when you went on to winning and losing bonus. And I think that's where a lot of the... Well, it kept the game going at the time, didn't it? Because, you know, if you didn't win, you didn't get that much money. But if you did win, you earned a few bob. So everybody wanted to win. You know?
Yeah.
It was a very competitive game at the time. But it was done within a matter of half an hour. John Wilkinson was the chairman then. Still friends with John till today. We did it. We signed it. And I was training and playing, I think the day after. I think they had a reserve A team, as they called it then, semi-final. Yeah. And I played the day after, I think, and had a blind and got picked in the squad for the first team the following Sunday, which was just, and I think I made my debut within a month of signing, which was...
Rapid, innit?
Yeah, it was mad. Yeah. But it was, I think they were in the old second division then. They'd gone down the year before I'd signed, and we got up that year, we got promoted that year. But it was great to make my debut and eventually make, I don't know, whatever, how many appearances I made and captain the club. So it was a wonderful career.
And the famous Willows as well, mate.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
The play there was beautiful, wasn't it? You know, it was one of them traditional grounds that, you know, still should be there, but unfortunately isn't.
No, the away dressing room weren't too nice, though. No, I remember playing a Tartine game there.
Yeah. The dressing room wasn't better, let me tell you. Probably a little bit size, but you used to have them sloping.
Yeah, they'd leak and that.
Yeah, the shed was above you and you could hear the feet and the chanting. And they tried to modernise it over the years, but it wasn't big enough to modernise. You couldn't go anywhere with it. But it was certainly a ground with atmosphere, you know, and Norton Park and Knowsley Road were the same, weren't they? They were all fabulous grounds to play at. And I was so, I wouldn't change a thing. I was happier playing in that era because... Some of the stadiums that we played at, I know they were getting a bit old and decrepit in the time, but they were great to play at. The atmosphere was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I know. And say there's like 5,000 there, but really there's probably 12. And
you're getting all, like, you got all of that.
You hear it, you feel it.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. No, so in them early days, mate, was anyone put their arm around you and look after you, or did you not really need that?
No, you didn't get it. No.
Yeah, the culture is very different, wasn't it? Yeah, like viewers and listeners need to remember that, really.
Yeah, I got a few injuries early doors for whatever reason. Probably because when I probably look back on it, I probably wasn't in the right physical shape to play professional rugby for whatever reason. I was just there and it was happening. Yeah. I had my shoulder reconstructed and my ankle reconstructed in the first couple of years, so that delayed me. And that I remember training on my own for what felt like it probably was as well.
Forever.
Months and months and months and months, if not years, because the two injuries. And I remember Kevin Ashcroft was my coach at the time, saying, "Don't worry, you'll be all right. This happens. This is rugby. It happens. Keep your head right." So, yeah, you just touch bases with the coaches. Your family are there in the background, aren't they, to support them, my views. But no, it's pretty much, you know, I think the camaraderie amongst the players was close then. You know, it was very good. It was, you had to look after each other. So the teams were very close knit. They still are to this day. But
yeah,
there was no, and it's great that we've got player welfare now in the game to help you with every, you know, education and your mental health and well-being. So I'm really pleased that we've got that in the game. I'm really passionate about the delivery of our education to our players and making sure them and the families are all right. That's very important for us as a game. So I am an advocate of all that. But you didn't have that then. It was
I can't imagine
sink or swim job, mate. And
yeah.
I think I remember playing against Hull KR away one night on a Thursday night, and they had like Phil Hogan and David Watkins playing, and it was like, I'm only 19, 20, and these guys are, you know, top end of the 20s, early 30s maybe. And
seasoned bros.
Big human beings.
Yeah.
Human beings. I'm like, this is crazy. But, you know, what do they say? It makes you stronger, doesn't it? Things like
it
that.
It does. So did that happen quite early on in you?
Yeah.
Them big injuries. So how does a young lad who is about to live the dream get to grips with the fact that it's pretty key? Maybe back then some of them can be career-ending depending where you're at in your life, can't they? Very, immobilising. And you don't want to see lads there, but you semi-hope someone does so you're not on your bill in the gym. How do you get over that and what's the rehab like?
I think, strength and conditioning, physio, medical now is absolutely spot on, And I've looked at other sports as well and we're up there. It's very good. And, back then we didn't have the machinery that the physios have got now, I think we had an ultrasound at Salford. That was an ultrasound machine.
And a sponge.
Whatever you got, that was your options, which one do you want. So, no, if you're getting injuries now, and we've had them in and, I've let players go off the back of their injury record, and that's sport. It's not just rugby. That happens in sport, and it's never the best. And I do feel so sorry for them. But sometimes they have to take a step back to come back again, I think. So, and that's happened a few times. But every player gets pretty much well looked after now.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's down to yourselves. And when I was saying I was training on my own, I still have that grit and determination to not let the injuries beat me and win. And I think you've got to have that within you. You've got to listen to what the experts tell you to do and build whatever muscles or diet that they give you to help you get back to playing again. And that's, I certainly did that when I was playing. I remember I had a couple of good Aussies around me at the time, good players. And they were saying, make sure you get in the gym and do your bench pressing, because that was like, and then rowing. We had big things on rowing at the time, which was brand new, because I think it was Steve Redgrave, the Olympic rower, brought all this rowing training out, and that came into the game pretty quick. So as long as you look after yourself and listen to people, you can get yourself back from injuries. Rehab is very important, but the players have got to be able to do it themselves as well.
No, you can say it, isn't it? Take the horse to water, but you can't make them drink, can you? Absolutely. That's an uncoachable, that, isn't it? You just need to have it.
You've got that drive and that ambition in you to make sure you come back stronger.
Yeah. And obviously your role's drastically changed now, which we will touch on later. But as a player, the chats that we'll have a little talk about later, was you someone that expected the direct chat? Was you happy for someone to be just straight and honest with you? Or?
Yeah, and that's to this day, I think.
Yeah.
Rugby players are smart as well. They can see through you. Don't bull. Just.
Yeah, yeah.
I think as a player, I always wanted that. Tell me straight. If I've had a rubbish game, tell me.
Yeah.
If I'm doing something right, tell me. Praise me. If I'm not doing something good, tell me. And I'll work on it. And that's what I think that's definitely the case to this day. Just be honest with the players. And I think they respect that even more.
Yeah. Especially maybe because you've been in that situation yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know what you want to hear. Sometimes it's not good what you're hearing, but you want to know about it. Sometimes you might put it to the back of your mind, think I've got away with that this week, but you know it's going to come back.
So, 100%, mate. And I think that shows in how much players, ex-players, fans speak so highly of you. It's because you're a pretty direct and honest club, aren't you? And
we've got to be
quite honest, but you are.
Because
these books are cliches that you have to say to Sky and BBC and the Championship, Premier Sports, or whoever wants to listen, go behind that and walk away from the mic, and the chat's still there waiting to be had, isn't it, at the side of the pitch or whatever. And so you've played in some big occasions, mate, and I ask everybody this, and these cup final weeks, I know, because you used to play a lot more often, didn't you? You'd play like midweek games and stuff, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we did.
They're not just ordinary weeks, though, Ian, are they? And how did you deal with them weeks? And how was your first one?
It's like I mentioned the Boxing Day and the New Year's Day. That was a tough period to get over. But again, and we didn't have the facilities that you got today. We didn't have the strength and conditioners telling you what to do and stop. You've run too much now, and he'll get an injury if you carry on doing that with him. So we didn't have all that. And it was winter on it as well. So it was, a lot of the grounds were pretty, muddy, which I was happy with because it brought every other player down to my speed. So
horses for courses, as they say.
But it was, we always had busy schedules. The lads have got busy schedules now.
Yeah.
I look at the game now, and there's not a chance of me playing to this standard that they play at now. But then again, as people say, you know, athletes evolve, don't they? When Super League became full time, you could see the athletes appearing more and more. We've got some wonderful athletes in the game, and they do cope with it. I'm probably on their side about playing too many in a year.
Yeah,
but I do see the club side of it, where we've got to get the income in as well. Otherwise, you know, we don't pay the wage.
Doesn't exist.
It's that balance you've got to find. Hopefully, the next TV deal will be good.
Yeah,
and allow us to strategize even more as a game. I think you learn to cope with it as a player. You know, you just, and it is an old cliche, every game as it comes, but you do end up doing that. You just focus on that game. Tomorrow's tomorrow, and you work it out basically as you go through the season.
Yeah, especially as the thick and fast. Like, don't get me on the iron now, but back then, like you said, you were playing midweek weekends. You had loads of cup comps, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. There was a lot. There was a lot of cup comps. Yeah, the John Play and the Lancashire Cup, obviously the Yorkshire Cup, and yeah, there was a lot of competition. Yeah, there was.
Yeah. And how big was the squad then, Ian? Was rotation a thing then, or
you had a really strong A team? Because as I get, you know, they were just playing for winning and losing money. There was probably no contract money there.
Yeah,
it's a good question actually. Probably similar to what size squads are today. Maybe not as big. Maybe not as big.
Because you know, you had two subs, Ian, didn't you?
Yeah, you did as well.
Yeah,
I'll say this to some of the lads, and they're like, "What?"
It weren't rolling either. Once you were off, weren't you?
You get an injury and you've done your two sub, you're staying on. I remember I dislocated my shoulder in one game. Couldn't go off because we didn't have a sub.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, to the next person, to you, just help me out and help me defend here because
it's
off. So, yeah, it was when you look back at the two sub rule, it was just...
It's mad, isn't it? Yeah.
It was what it was at the time, so you've got to get on with it. I mean,
yeah. And how did you find the build up to a cup final as a player?
Yeah, yeah. It's same as any. You're nervous, aren't you? You're very nervous. Yeah. You're very nervous. I think, and I say, you know, I've got my daughter's into swimming quite a lot, and I say to her, how you handle your mind and your nervousness before a game or an event is key to it. It's key to it.
And it's half the battle, isn't it?
If you're not nervous, there's something wrong. But you can't be too relaxed either. And I think the older you get, the more experience you get as an athlete in any sport, the more you learn how to cope.
Yeah.
On with big pressure. And I didn't play for Great Britain, unfortunately, or anything like that. But playing a game of Super League, any level of rugby league is tough. You've got to be in the right space mentally, because if you're not, certainly in the 80s, 90s, 2000, you're going to get a good hiding. You know, somebody's going to drop you if you're not on the ball. So it was always always struggle with nerves. But just once you're out there, you're fine. It's bizarre. You just, everything's forgot. As soon as you run out of that tunnel,
it's just another game, isn't it? Yeah.
You're good. Yeah. Everything goes away. You're not even thinking about how nervous I am. You're thinking about who's going to knock my head off today, or how can I score today, or how can I have a good game today? Different thoughts, totally different thoughts to what you've thought about the night before, or the build up into the game. I remember an old pro said to me once, because I was probably looking nervous sat in the dressing rooms. He said, "Bleasy, don't play a game an hour before the kickoff."
Yeah. Easier said than done, but it's clever,
It always stuck with me. So sometimes when I was feeling really anxious or whatever, you're all right, it's another hour away yet. You just chill your boots, and that's sort of like stuck with me for a while.
Yeah. So as your role now, you've had a successful couple of years. We're not done on your playing career, by the way, but does it feel the same? Except, thankfully, you're not having to lace the boots up against some fit fellas.
It's easy sat in the stand. I've always said that. So in your armchair, sat in the stand, it's dead easy rugby, isn't it? It's totally different when you're on that pitch. Yeah. But I enjoy watching the lads. It's great. And it's, you know, when you do have a little bit of success, you know, obviously we got to the Grand Final and Challenge Cup and semi-final last year, we were just unlucky. It's great to see, because it's something that you've been a part of building. It's a different feeling because, you know, when you come off that pitch and you've played and you've won, that's the best feeling in the world. And you're around your mates and your boys, you know, it's
yeah,
that's irreplaceable. But I've enjoyed being on the other side of it. It's nice because there's no way I wanted to play. When I finished playing, that was me done. I was happy with what I'd done, tried to.
Yeah.
But I had no regrets. Absolutely nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, just at peace with it, mate. Yeah.
Dead right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I was dead comfortable with it. And I'd given everything mentally. I think I read Jonathan Davis said one in his book, a thing. I'm sure he put something along. It's not having, like, at the time, you like your Sunday lunches and things like that, because we all used to play on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Mentally, in the end, your family time and missing out on all that breaks you in the end. It's probably not your mind, because you can still get there. The body starts to let you down a little bit. But yeah, mentally, after so many years, it wears you down, definitely.
Yeah. Right, so we've talked about the cup finals and that. Is there any, you captain the club, which is massive for a local lad, isn't it? You led from the front in big occasions, you've scored in big occasions. Did you keep memorabilia like you mentioned? Did you keep a couple of things or?
Yeah, I was getting the Christmas tree down, but I found some bits and pieces. Actually, we've got an old boys group WhatsApp, and I found Jane Anson, who used to play for us. He played for Samoa back in the day. I found his Samoa shirt that he'd give me, and it was in my loft. So yeah, I've got some bits and pieces up in my loft.
Yeah.
Old photos, program, testimonial brochure, things like that. An old shirt I've got my first Super League shirt still up there. I'll probably put them somewhere in my house one day. But I've got my medals somewhere from the Lancashire Cup finals and the winning the Championship League 2 and stuff like that, and playing for Lancashire, obviously. I've got them in a drawer. I'm not one for sort of like looking back too much. It was great at the time. I loved it, and I'm thankful it happened to me. But I'm all about looking forward.
On to the next.
That's how I'm built. That I like to look forward. I like to.
That's fair enough.
But I don't dwell really, but I do look back at my time and think, yeah, you were lucky. You were lucky to have that journey, but it was a great journey. It wasn't always rough. You know, we had some tough times at Salford. We did.
Yeah.
But one thing we had was a good culture on the place, and that's what we've tried to build here, really, to the modern day. We've had a good culture. We all help each other. It's a Salford motto that we look after our own, and we try and get that throughout the club, really.
Right. So, was there anything that really stood out from your time at Salford that not only are you grateful for? It can be positive and negative, mate, can't it? It can be whatever way you want to look at it. But something that people might overlook that you think was pretty pivotal to your time as a player there?
Yeah, I think the most things I set myself from signing from Folly, I set myself some little goals, which I still do to this day, really, is, right, make your debut. Make your first debut was in my mind. As soon as I signed, make your debut. That happened pretty quick. Oh, that's good, right? Okay, what next? Well, you need to play like 10 first team games now. Managed to do that, 20, not contractually, I was getting money for it as well, which is, it was always a bonus.
Yeah.
So I was setting my objective with an eye on the money in the background as well.
Yeah.
But then it was like, right, okay, so after you played 20, 30 game, what's the next goal? And it was, you know, to become a regular first teamer, but also at some stage to captain the club, which happened. I remember the day clearly when Kevin Tamati pulled me aside at training and said, right, I think Mick Worrell has just left and gone somewhere. He was a great player, Mick, a tourist, captain, played for Great Britain. He was captain of the club at the time, and he left and went somewhere. I think, it might have been John Pendlebury, somebody like that. And I thought to myself, well, I might have a bit of a chance here of being captain. And he shouted me over. So it was a very, really, really proud moment for me. I think it was captain for 3 or 4 or 5 years, whatever it was. And that was a massive honour for me, that. And hopefully
did that alter your game at all, sorry?
Yeah, it's hard to say really. Did it alter you? I think you feel...
Or did you see the game different?
Yeah, I think the responsibility on you becomes more heightened, I think. And I think, I'm not saying losing hurt me more because I was captain. Probably did.
Yeah.
I felt it more because you do become more involved with the coaching. And obviously, the directors of the club, you know, you are party to meetings and discussions, and
Right, so you're a bit the middleman there, mate, was you? Yeah.
You're in it that level that's like any working career, and as you progress, you get sort of like promoted or you climb the ladder. You sort of like, you know, learn to appreciate things. So I think the responsibility changes you as a player. And I guess when thinking back, when you're down and out as a team, maybe in a game, you take it on yourself to try and do something that will
produce a bit of magic.
Yeah, or give words of encouragement for somebody to be. So varying different tactics over the years you use as a captain. And I was surrounded by some great players as well, so it was pretty easy. But it was a great time. It was sort of like, you know, the ambition was to win something, although we never like won Super League. We got to the Lancashire Cup finals and we played Old Trafford twice in the Premiership, second division Premierships that got us into Super League, and they were good times. And
I know, especially as a United fan as well.
That was a dream come true, playing at Old Trafford and winning as well. So they were good, although it was the old second division titles then. But it was still a good standard, you know.
It was just,
I think we played Halifax at the time. We were a great team, and Keighley, and it was the year of Cougar Mania, and they were flying at the time. So it was, you know, some good games there. And then, obviously, to get in Super League and stay in Super League, and that's what we managed to do.
Yeah.
And we didn't get relegated after that first year, I think, when I joined. So I think we had virtually many years in Division One, and then through to Super League. I think the only time we didn't get in Super League when they give the licenses out, and I think we didn't get one. That was when they switched over from winter to summer rugby, so we had to win the league in the winter and then win it in the summer to get into Super League, which we did.
I remember Rob Myler mentioned something like you played virtually back to back.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We went for winter. Had, I don't know, a couple of months off, maybe if that, you know, but. Pre-season, so probably after a couple of weeks off, and then back training, and you were kicking off in January, February, right through to the summer. But we had a great team then: Andy Platt, Steve Hampson, Sam Panapper, Steve Blakely, Scott Naylor, Nathan McElroy. Yeah. We had a fantastic team then. We managed to get into Super League, and I think I was coming towards the back of my career then. I think I might have been 31, 32, and I knew I was virtually at the end, but it was great to get to the club into Super League, and I think they were there for donkey's years after that. So,
right,
it was all good.
And without you knowing, mate, is your relationship changing with the likes of match officials, with, you mentioned it before, coaching staff, board members, because you're taking on that leadership role? But again, you touched on it a little bit, the game's slightly changing, because them little decisions that 9 out of 10 people overlook, like, what do you do with a penalty? What sort of player do you put on here? Who you playing? They matter, don't they, at the top end of the game? So are you starting to see how a club should look, considering the role you're in now?
So like, tactically, on a match day, that's down to the coaches, and I would never get involved in any decisions on the pitch. That's down to, at the moment, Paul Rowley, Kurt Haggerty, and Kristen Innu, who we've brought on.
When you were playing, that is not now.
As a skipper, you've got to make tough decisions at the right time, and you don't always get it right either.
Yeah.
So decision-making's always come easy to me, to be fair. It's never been a problem to make a decision. Sometimes it's not a popular one either that you have to make. But
so be it, isn't it?
That's always been my attitude. It's always done with the best intentions and never personal.
I don't think anyone can complain at that either, Ian, can they?
No.
You're being direct, honest.
No. And I've always thought, like, that's always been my motto, is just be honest and straight.
Yeah.
Some people will like it. Some people might disagree with it. That's their lookout. But I always like to call a spade, really.
Yeah. And when you're honest, mate, there's no blurred lines. No. There can't be no Chinese whisper with it, can there? And you won't get caught up in nothing, because what you say the first time is exactly what you say the 100th time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and as you get into the back end of your career, mate, is going into anything off the field regarding rugby a thought? Did you have any thoughts for after rugby?
I'd worked for the local authority for many years. And actually, when they went full time Super League, I chose not to go full time because I was 32, I think. 32. And I had a working career, which I was doing all right at.
Yeah.
working alongside the rugby, and it was Andy Gregory at the time. He was my coach. He was going mad because I wouldn't go full time, but I knew physically I'd got one or two Super League years in me at top. My body was 250 odd games. My body was coming towards the end of it, but I wanted to take Super League. Thankfully, I did. But I stayed part time. It's bizarre because where the stadium's situated now, Salford City Stadium here down,
yeah,
in Eccles. We used to train here when we first got into Super League. It used to be pitches with little changing rooms and stuff like that. It's changed dramatically now. So we used to sort the boys out in work, then come here, train, I don't know, 10 till 1, and then go back to work. So I was quite busy at the time.
I can imagine, yeah.
At no stage did I want to be a coach. I never thought about being a coach. It didn't interest me that. There was things that were at Salford that I won't disclose at the time that I didn't quite like in the background. Certain people
put you off.
Yeah, it put me off.
Yeah.
And I thought years previous that I probably would like to go into it, but I didn't. I chose a career outside rugby, and I did that for, you know, another 20, nearly 30 years before I came back 6 years ago, whatever it is now. So,
if it's 6 years, that's flew, hasn't it? Yeah,
it has flown. Yeah, I became a player's agent just to get him. I had a mate who was a football agent, he was mad at me for ages. Oh, let's get into the rugby. And I thought, you know what, I wouldn't mind getting back into that scene again. And there was nothing apart from thoughts of enjoyment. I didn't want to get into the game, just maybe, you know,
flirt with it a little bit. Yeah,
and that's what I did, and it escalated from there, really. I managed to get all the, you know, Mark Sneed's a good example. I ended up looking after him. Yeah. Salford fans still think I took him away from Salford, but I didn't. That was another person who was coached at the time's decision. But I enjoyed that part of it, but I never wanted to be a coach. Still would never want to be a coach, if I'm honest, but I've enjoyed coming back doing the rugby side of things at the club. It's been brilliant.
It's not mad, because you can see just from speaking to you now, you care about the club, about the people.
Mm.
You know the game, but you know, as much as you've got to look after a player's got to look after you. That's the business side.
Yeah.
So there's no shot that you started in that avenue.
Mm.
But when you're in that avenue and you're discussing things, did you quite realise how much the game's changed? Were some of the talks petty? Because I imagine they are, you know, between a club and a player, like little daffing. I'm not asking for any T's and C's, but just being away from the game for that time, have you seen a drastic change?
Yeah, but I think in a positive way as well, though. It's, you know, money changed the game, didn't it? You know, let's have it.
Of course it did, yeah.
We all became fully professionals, which I remember saying to the club at one stage when I was playing, I think we played Wigan one warm-up game, and they've all come out like sizes of houses, and I'm thinking, they're all full-time, these, and there was a massive advantage over us then at that time. I remember going into the club saying, I want to go full-time, and they're like, well, we can't afford it. And disappointingly, you know, we couldn't go full-time. So obviously with the Sky money and people getting good money, the game's progressed in a positive way, I think. I think, you know, even though I think we went through a pretty stagnant stage a few years ago where the game was, I'd say, boring. It was just very mundane. I think we tried to copy the Australians too much over the years. But I think in the last few years, I think we've got the game back to being an entertaining spectacle, what it needs to be.
And they've copied us a few times, which is nice to see as well. Isn't it?
If you remember, like, the Ashes series, I know we didn't win a particular one, but we always used to score the best tries, didn't we? We always you know, pull off them amazing try. I know they scored a few against us at the time, but yeah, I think the game went through a period of just like hit it up, kick.
Yeah.
Hopefully, the style we played last year and other clubs, is the way. You've got to entertain, haven't you? It's an entertainment sport, and
to get bums on seats, and then it's about winning, I suppose, isn't it?
And the pressure's on the coaches. I'm not saying you throw it everywhere. You can't do that. Your job's to win games, but I think we proved him. Rolls and Hags proved last year, and Danny Orr, who's with us then, that you can play a nice brand of football. It'll bite on the backside maybe sometimes, you've got to accept that.
Yeah.
Play a nice brand of football and create you know, an atmosphere for your fans and a game that that they're going to thinking, oh, well, we can win here. You know, we can win differently and stylishly. Yeah. I was very proud of the way the boys played last year. I thought it was tremendous.
Well, I think Paul, Kurt and Chris, now, it'll be all well and good playing touchline to touchline, but you can only do that if the lads are willing to back it up on the other side of the ball, can't they?
Yeah.
And I think you just do it more than often than you just don't you? So.
And the guys are, you know, I call them rugby geniuses. What they, you know, I kept saying to them last year, don't underestimate what you've done. It's tremendous. You know, we didn't have the best start to the year. I'm hoping we get a better start this year.
Yeah.
We didn't have the best start, but the brand of football we were playing towards the back end was. So people have said to me, it's best thing, you know, Salford side since the 70s, they've seen 70s and probably not far off wrong, some of the stuff.
Could have said, that's rude, I was in it in the 90s, mate.
I know, listen, there's no way you could compare to this. Nowadays, not a chance. You'd adapt with the situation.
Yeah. And it's a different game, like we said, isn't it?
Yeah. Totally different game, mate. Totally different game, different, you know. But I think, you know, I was really pleased with the way they showed themselves up last year on the pitch. I thought they were really good in what they did and the way they applied themselves and how they carried themselves. I thought they were really true professionals last year.
Yeah.
Great.
No, he's a pleasure to watch. But so the personality traits that you had, playing, working, local authority, an agent, they all into that with all the roles, could be anywhere, and you're the same person, and you've took that into like now, and you've managed to bring Mark home, even though you probably got the blame for him going. And, you know, so how do you transpire into each of them roles, and what little changes do you have to make?
I've always been a fan of, it sounds weird this, I've always been a fan of change. So I know it scares some people, but I quite like organisational change and doing different things and unpicking things and rebuilding them up. To some extent, when I walked through the door, it was a bit of a mess, to be fair.
I think it was well publicised as well, mate.
Yeah, going in the wrong direction. And listen, you know, there's other people involved now that have done great jobs.
Yeah.
So it isn't just, you know, isn't just me this at all. It's taken 6 years to get where we are now. We're still not nowhere near where we need to get to as a club, and we're all aware of that. But I think we had to do a lot of things. When I look back now at what we did to get where we are, there's been a lot of change going on, and it never frightens me that. And if at some stage that's me that has to change, that's it. That's the job. And I've always, throughout my career, I've always managed to do that. I've always tried to apply myself to the role and make sure you give the best for what you can give. So nothing like that's ever put me off. When I walk through the door, I had some sleepless nights, what I found and what I uncovered. But we're at a state now where I think we've managed to change people's perceptions, I would say, of us. Not totally. Yeah. But I think we're on that journey of changing people's perceptions that Salford don't bring much to the game and stuff like that. And that's not easy. That's not easy to do overnight.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, I think I've been here 6 years, whatever it is now. We've still got a lot of work to do to get to there. We need to get more crowd. We need to do better commercially. We need to attract different people within the club to make sure that there's a legacy. I'm just keen on leaving. Whenever I leave, is a better club than what it was when I came. And I think, you know, if I walked out the door tomorrow, I think I'd be pleased. What we've done. Yeah. Yeah. But like I say, it's not finished yet.
No.
Nowhere near. Still a lot of work to be done. And it's pleasing when you do, even though we've not won anything, we've got to a grand final, we've got to a Challenge Cup, like I've said, and that's, can't keep dining out on them though, because like I say, if you keep looking backwards, you lose sight of where you're going.
Yeah.
And we do, there's a drive and there's an ambition and you can feel it. And I've said it before, within the club. So hopefully something magical will happen. You never know. But you know, there's a lot of club. I've said it to somebody yesterday, I think this year Super League will be the toughest Super League since its inception.
To be honest with you, I think
one weak link there now, John. All right, London, maybe Toulouse, and even Lee in the past with that little weak link there.
Were probably just in between, weren't they? They were probably too good for the champ, but not quite good for Super League at times. No offense to them.
And Lee have done some great signings.
Yeah.
So glad they're back in it, and we'll have some great games with them. Our fans love playing them and they love playing us, I hope. So we'll play them first game of the season, which will be really good. Yeah. So it'll be a great Super League this year. And the likes of, you know, fair to say, Warrington and Hull, who had disappointing seasons last year, won't have disappointing seasons this year, I'm convinced. Yeah. Again, they've recruited well, changed their coaching staff in some instances. So everybody is going to be on fire this year. So I'm really excited. And as I've said, we just need to make sure we get a good start, because it's going to be a tough year, really hard year, really competitive year, which is great for the game. And that's what the fans want to see.
Of course they do, yeah. And that'll bring the bums on seats, hopefully, mate. And
yeah.
So the only other thing I'd have said to you really is the little landmarks that probably only the fans see that show the progress for Salford are probably pinching people that aren't even in the prime yet but are still up there, players from bigger clubs, mate, no offence. So your Ollie Partingtons.
Yeah.
To complement the little gems you find, like Jacko, like Baroldi, who it was pretty apparent might have lost a bit of love for the game and he's coming and done what he's done. And then Ryan looks a different player now he's with you guys. And like Akko does a good job when he steps in, and old Chris. And it's just all them little pieces, like you were saying about your academies, that maybe other clubs might have overlooked when you put them together, produce what you're producing. And so there's obviously more stuff than that behind the scenes that contribute to the overall success. But when the fans see them sort of things, you must get people coming up to you absolutely buzzing with the business you do.
Yeah. I think it's luck more than anything, mate. And I've said it.
A bit of it is, though, Ian, isn't it?
I never say good luck to people. I always say best wishes, because I don't think there's luck. I think there's destiny in life. I do. I truly believe there's destiny. Great. I'm not going spiritually, by the way. I'm just
saying. Oh, but everything happens for a reason. I believe that.
I'm a massive believer in things happen for a reason. There's destiny. If you do the right things, you get the right people. You surround yourself with the right people in life. Things happen for you. We have been blessed with our signings, and you've named a few of them there. You know, and the likes of Gil Dudson and Lee Mossop, yeah, and Mark Flanagan and Tyrone McCarthy have been. They've been fabulous to the current day. You've mentioned there with Ollie and Brody, Tim Laffey, and Kenny Seale has been a great signing for us. So I could, without wanting to risk of not naming people, I could look at every team from 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22 and say that great.
Shrewd business right away through. Yeah.
We've not got it all right. And I always say that to people. We've not got it all right. It's impossible. The great Alex Ferguson never got everything right, did he? I'm not saying I'm not comparing myself to him.
No, but we did sign Pepe, didn't we?
He didn't get it right sometimes.
No.
But it does, what I do always say, it does hurt us a little bit more when we don't get it right. So there's work that goes on behind the scenes, and it doesn't happen without fabulous coaches. I've got to say, it's all right picking them players out and dropping them in. It's the guys who do the work behind the scenes here and the backroom team, and I've said it a million times. Absolutely fabulous. The work that they do, if you could harness that, you could become a millionaire overnight, mate. I'm telling you, because the work they do is tremendous.
Yeah.
And they build that culture, that environment in there. Rolls is doing a fabulous job along the curtain now. Chris's coming, learning the Salford way. And it does stem from the top. Of course it does. But we have been cute with our signings. And I won't use the word lucky, but there's been destiny.
Yeah. Good way of putting it, yeah, I agree with that.
To an announcement at the stadium throwing me out.
It's all right. Sorry.
No, it's all right, but I'm very proud of what we've done. And it's, you know, the signings we've made have taken this club to where it is now. It's not, like I said, I keep saying, it's not where it needs to be yet. But, you know, we've done a good job amongst us all at the moment. Yeah. And there's still room for improvement, definitely. And there's still better signings to come, I hope. And it makes... I noticed when we did get to the 19 final that agents were calling me, throwing the players at me, where I'm 2 years previous.
Yeah, changing. So it's swinging, isn't it? Yeah,
it does. And that's natural, isn't it? You know, you'd think that was happening. It does. And Ollie's a great example this year. Did I think I would get Ollie when I started to go in for him? No, I didn't. He's got a few good connections here with players, which was good. I get him with his agent. And thankfully, we've managed to get him, and I'm so excited to see him this year out of them all. You know, I can't wait to see Alan in a Salford shirt. He's just what we need, I think. But again, I could be wrong. And it'll be great to see Brody and all the World Cup lads. Marks need Andy Ackers, who play for England, having great years last year. I think the tough ask is, can you do it again now, guys? Can you go again? Hopefully they can. They've got the temper, they've got the attitude to do that again. When I know that's right, because when they come in asking what we're getting for winning grand finals in Challenge,
you're doing something right, man. Yeah.
Pretty good. I'm happy to have some conversations. that's a good sign.
They
won't get carried away. They're great professionals. And every club have got great, you know, every club will say it. We've all got great professionals. We have. Mm. But it's good to see the chat around things like that, rather than when you first come into a club, you think, wow, this is like,
I'll do this,
it's been a good journey so far, really good journey.
What I like as well, you don't get bored of playing.
No.
So you, for a better use of a phrase, you'll keep your head on someone's your foot on someone's throat.
Yeah.
You just don't let up very often.
No.
You just enjoy how you play, yeah.
And you can see that, you know, and to play the way that we play, you've got to be... You've got to be fit. You've got to be strong. You've got to be tough as well. And
got to trust each other, mate, as well.
Yeah. And they do do that well. I think they've got a good atmosphere.
Yeah,
you can hear the banter and the laughter. You know, on days it's great to see in here on the training pitch. It's brilliant, and there's definitely something special brewing in the club.
Yeah, and that it says it when players don't really want to leave now, do they?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that sort of says what your culture's about now, mate. Just appreciate and take a lot of your time. So I've got a few daft questions for you.
All right, go on.
So any pre-match superstitions?
When I was playing?
Yeah.
I had a couple of things in my locker that I used to touch and things like that. And then I used to go and say a little prayer. I'm not very religious, but for some reason, my daughter does it now when she's thinking little things like that. Nothing major. Yeah.
Just little appetite pleasers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the toughest player you played with and against?
As in best or hat? So
definition is different for everybody here, and that's what I usually say. So for me, for toughness, I'd look at a winger that might carry hard out of the backfield or someone that does them tough, unwanted carries.
Yeah. Toughest player ever played against, did you say?
Yeah.
Kurt Sorensen was by far the toughest player I've ever played against.
Mm.
Wouldn't trust him, not to gouge your eyes. But he was a tough guy.
Yeah.
You know, but when you flip it, best player was Elroy Hanley without a shadow of a doubt. And there's other great players that I played against, you know, Sean Edwards, Andy Gregory, all the Wigan team really, but Elroy was cut above the rest, man.
No doubt. So your favourite away ground?
Headingley.
It's mega popular, Headingley. Is there just something about it, mate? Yeah.
Mate, even better now they've done it up. It's just the ground. And I think they went through a period of not playing or getting some results. And I always used to go and play there and play well because the facilities were great. Where you go to the Willows or Halifax, for example, the shit, whatever it's called. You come out of there, you're like, oh, what?
Yeah, you know you've been there, don't you?
Everything's beautiful. The pitch is beautiful. Everything about it is beautiful.
Right. So, if you're out with the lads, mate, you've had a few. You're a bonding. The microphone ends up in Mr. Bleece's hands.
Yeah.
What are you giving us?
The jam. Tam Corn Malice.
Yeah. Class. I understand you played with a great players, mate. And if you don't want to do it, I do. I get it. But if you can say a 1 to 13 that you've played with.
Oh, all right. Okay. Steve Gibson, fullback. I'll go for.
1 second, mate. Gibson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wingers, Tex Evans, Adrian Hadley. I've got to be careful because some of them are on the group WhatsApp here. They'll be centres. I'd go for Martin Burnick and Sam Panapa, I think.
Yeah.
Half backs. I'd put Peter Williams as six. And I've always liked David Cairns, who was one of the first players when I joined the club from Barrow Cymru. Steve Carey will go mad that I'm not picking him here, but anyway. Props. There was a guy called Jeff Selby who actually died, but I think he might have been a back row, but he was quality. Andy Platt, was a good, great player. Yeah. Matt Lee was my favourite hooker. Mick Worrell, second row.
Yeah.
Arthur Bradshaw and Andy Burgess as my back row partners who were at that time.
Yeah. Right, thank you.
That's a quick one off the top of my head without thinking, really.
Fair play to you. No, thanks very much.
I apologise to them lads who have not picked there, but Terry O'Connor will go mad. I've not picked him.
Yeah, well, he does.
Yeah, he'll go mad. Yeah.
You've been listening to Trot the Eggin'. Thanks to our sponsors, Bardell Sports. Follow us on Twitter @TrotTheEggin and Instagram @Trot_the_egg_in.